Yep, we're going to keep doing that.
Welcome back. It's the Sheldon McLeod Show. Matt Brand, the producer. Oh, Matt, we had a big shout-out for the audio piece. John said, big props to Matt for the intro. Excellently done. Well played, sir.
Couldn't have done it without the Raptors.
Well, there's that, too. Our SMS poll of the day, we all know the Raptors won the championship last night, and championship teams, many of them have avoided the White House. Do you think the Raptors will visit the White House? So far, 100% new. Ojalander's in our studio. You stayed up late to watch.
I did.
And?
Well, I mean, I was cheering for Golden State, so...
Oh, I didn't mean to let that get out of the bag. Hey, careful now.
Yeah.
Matt's going to have all the buttons pushed, or you're pushing his. So I know people want to hear from Moshe. What? You're an economist, but you also look at sports economy, and people are saying, what's this worth? It's worth a championship.
Yeah. The value of the franchise probably went up last night, and if they manage to retain Kawhi Leonard, it'll probably go up a little more, but if they lose him, it'll go down a little bit. But you know what? That team's probably worth around maybe $2.5 billion Canadian these days. Wow. So that's a pretty nice return on your investment over 25 years.
Not bad. And as far as franchises are concerned, obviously a championship raises the stock immensely.
Absolutely.
And immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah. Golden State is now like one of the top three or four franchises in terms of value, and that's because of 5 years of ongoing success. So success creates money.
Didn't save their stadium.
No, but wait till you see what they move into next year. It's stunning.
Taxpayers paying that?
Nope. That is being financed almost entirely with private dollars in San Francisco by the Bay, and it's worth about $1.5 billion American.
Wow.
So
it's like 17 million billion trillion Canadian
dollars. Absolutely. So it makes the CFL stadium here look pretty modest and easy to finance by comparison.
We'll just pick theirs up and move it here.
Absolutely.
It doesn't work that way. We asked you to come in to talk a little bit about yesterday's announcement. There was a report that was released talking about a national pharmacare plan. And with that are some timelines. With that are some cost estimates or are some cost savings associated or at least assumed. So is there a financial case to be made that as 10 individual jurisdictions, we're going to pay more for drugs across this country than if we have one national power buying and negotiating?
Absolutely. So the concept that most of your listeners will probably have heard of is the idea of a monopoly. And so we know that monopolies are where you have only one seller of a product. And the idea that when you have one seller of a product is what they're going to do is they're going to jack up the price because of their market power. The flip side, which is not as well known, is something called a monopsony. Instead of a monopoly. Monopsony is where you have one buyer of a product. And so they basically exert their market power by pushing down the price that is paid rather than pushing up in the case of a monopoly. So by integrating all of the buyers of prescription drugs into one buyer, this creates a monopsony market. It is going to drive the price lower, and that's good for consumers, at least in that part of the story.
One of the people that I've been speaking about for years on this issue said that some of the challenges with having all the jurisdictions is the price fluctuates, but there are still new drugs being developed. There are catastrophic drugs that are not covered for the most part by drug plans. But what Bill Swan was saying is that it will save money. It'll cost a lot to start. Is
yes.
that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to bring 10 provincial systems, 3 territorial systems under one jurisdiction. And don't forget that the demographics of Canada are different. So, certain pockets of Canada are going to have a disproportionate amount of need for certain drugs that maybe other parts of Canada don't. So the way that those are priced in provinces would be different. You have to find some sort of common pricing scheme and trying to get all of that together. We've seen that when the federal government tries to take on all 10 provinces at the same time, it tends to go badly for them, and it tends to come in late and over cost.
$15 billion, it says, annual price tag once it's fully implemented. I don't know what the upfront cost would be, but $15 billion, that's a pretty big number, but compare that to what the overall budget in Canada is.
Yeah, and the fact is that it's going to grow too, right? Because as we have increased life expectancy in Canada, the fact is that more and more people are going to have need for prescription drugs, especially later in life when they reach 90s or into the 100s now, which is not something that you just put on the news during the weather section.
Yeah.
So the fact is that it's going to be expensive, and most of the voters in Canada are, if not seniors, then they're certainly in their working life, and they recognize either through their own family or through friends that seniors are going to need help. So it's going to be something that's very politically attractive regardless of the cost?
A single system, and it's a system that would see what? A disruption of what the insurance companies are doing now? How do you foresee that transition? What is a negotiation going to sound like when you say, you know what, you've been providing this service for your employees through another third party, through an insurance company. We're going to change all that.
Yeah, you almost have to kind of grandfather it in, or you have to have a transition period where you're almost running two parallel systems at the same time, right?
That can't be cheap.
No, it's not. And you know, these are best done, say, during the days when a government is running a budget surplus, right? So when there's the screaming masses saying, give me back that money and give me a tax cut or whatnot, that's the time where you say that, you know what, we've got this extra money. Why don't we roll out this system and slowly phase it in? And that's what that surplus money is for. So since you, the current taxpayer, have overpaid, we're going to use that money to help you transition to a cost savings that will come next time around.
Do we foresee government, and again, we know there's an election this fall, but that this would be based on transfer payments, that somehow that would work into this? Any thoughts on how the mechanisms would work?
You know what, we're for sure we're going to have to wait till after the election, but you know what, the problem that this current government is facing is that it now has, you could probably comfortably say, five provinces that are actively against the federal government and anything that it wants to do. So, you know, it's not to say that we need to think strategically in how we vote, but if these are the types of issues that are going to come up, we need to look carefully at the different plans that the parties are going to come up with. And what's their rollout? We talked last week, right, about public-private partnerships that have inappropriate deadlines. And, you know, the thought that you can somehow get this done in the next 2 years or 3 years is completely unrealistic. So, if you come up with a plan that, say, is 10 years to get this done, that's a little more believable and it's a little easier to get everybody to buy in because there's a long transition period.
But there's still a buy-in that's required in order for it to start. And what are the risks? I'm thinking of, you know, the Canadian government and helicopters at one point. You know, we have one government say they're doing one thing, another government comes in and cancels it, and then there are penalties, and then what? You end up with nothing and a big bill.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think maybe I was kind of intentionally making a pun there when I was saying that there's buy-in that's required. Buy-in not just in the sense that you have to believe in the project as well as me, but it's probably going to need that I'm going to have to pay you too, so that you're going to see money coming out of the federal government going to provinces that want to dig in their heels or scream that somehow they're different or they don't fit into this plan or they don't think it's for them, or they think that they can serve their local citizens better than the federal government can. So that's going to require some buy-in too.
Moshe Lander is here with us. He's an economics professor. He works with Dalhousie University, Concordia University. We see him on the media. We hear him on the radio. We're really grateful for your time. Ultimately, I don't know if many people think about a national pharmacare plan who have a pharmacare coverage through work. And I'm wondering where the challenge lies. If I'm already paying a premium through my work, you know, it's a little different than to say, well, okay, do I pay more in taxes? And that then comes off my pay, you know?
Yeah, the fact is you are going to have to pay more in taxes. And this is going to be a system that's going to be very difficult to try and sell to people. Even if I say that, look, I'm going to dollar for dollar reduce the premiums that you paid your private insurance, and I'm just going to increase your taxes by a dollar. The fact is that the people who are probably going to benefit most from this pharmacare program are probably the people that can least afford to pay for the pharmacare program through taxes. So there's a certain aspect here where this is going to be portrayed as a tax on the rich, that because you have the money, you are going to pay the federal government for a pharmacare system that healthy people, while they do need prescription drugs, don't necessarily need it in the same way because they can have a lifestyle that doesn't necessarily require constant need for prescription medication to deal with health problems. They have other channels to deal with it through healthier eating, healthier living, gym memberships, exercise, things like that.
Yeah, one of the, many of the stories that Bill Swan brought forward yesterday, people who had to choose, he said, and it's Sophie's choice about what ailment I'll treat because I can't afford all the pills.
Absolutely. And the fact is that once you move to a pharmacare program that's governed by the federal government is going to decide, you know, benefits and costs of each prescription drug by itself. So, you know, there's kind of that long tail of rare diseases that under a pharmacare program are unlikely to be covered because the federal government is not going to be able to negotiate a better price than an individual, because in some cases we're only talking about a handful of individuals that have this particular disease that needs prescription drugs in the first place. So the government might just say, you know what, it's not even worth it to us, forget it, we're not covering that. So you could be leaving a long tail of diseases that might even be uncovered. I know the report was saying that by 2027 it will cover all things, but that's just, it's not
possible.
No, it's not going to happen. You can't cover all things.
It's a fascinating conversation, but to look at it through the numbers. And today I learned the opposite of a monopoly is a...
Monopsony.
Monopsony. Yeah. Okay. Spell it for bonus points.
M-O-N-O-P-S-O-N-Y. Monopsony. I didn't even ask for the word origin.
I have no idea if you got that right or not.
yeah, well, you know, you ding. That means that I got it wrong, but it's okay. That's
No, that's the positive ding.
Oh,
that's
okay.
The good ding.
That's fine. So okay. That makes up for my Raptors comment earlier.
Moshe Lander, thanks for this. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We're going to step into the break. Moshe Lander, again, is a economics professor, an economics professor at Concordia, as well as working here in Dalhousie. We'll be back after the break to talk about tomorrow being World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, right after this. The Raptors win and edibles will be legal by December. Big day today. Lots going on. Welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7. We're in celebratory mode for many reasons this afternoon. Matt Brand, producer of this program, a little bit tired. 3 in the morning? You were up till 3 a.m.?
I couldn't just go to sleep when it was over. I thought about it because that would have been the best thing to do for my my mind.
Oh, I hate when you're just laying there going, oh, I'm so excited. This is great. I want to go to bed. I need to sleep.
I just went downstairs and just consumed post-game interviews. It was great. I'm not, you know, it's not going to happen again, so I'll just deal with, well, actually, you're going to have to deal with how bad I am today.
No, you're doing great. I thought when you said you went downstairs to consume, I thought you meant guac.
There was guacamole. Yeah. I had some cider. Both of them are seeping out of my pores as we speak.
Yeah, I didn't have any chicken sandwich, so.
Well, I took care
of it. And they still won. tomorrow, it's a very somber conversation in many ways, but I think education is very important. The RCMP, Department of Seniors, acknowledge World Elder Abuse Awareness Day for tomorrow. And we were working at trying to find someone to talk about this, and I thought, well, this is right in the wheelhouse of the folks from CARP. And Bill Van Gorder, as the National Board of Directors Senior Spokesperson, he's also with the chapter here in Nova Scotia, is with us on the line. Bill, how are you?
I am good. Sun is shining.
Oh, and are you a Raptors fan? You're a Raptors fan. You have to be one.
Of course I'm a Raptors fan, but I did not stay up late like Matt did last night.
Well, we can all cheer for, you know, he lived it for us, and we can, you know, keep going today while he's tired and trying to make his way through the day.
I had a 7 a.m. meeting this morning, so I had to keep that in mind.
When we're talking about World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and CARP has is one of its, well, is it a plank, is a platform, it's a policy, it's a vision statement. What is it that CARP says about why this is important? We all know why it's important, but what we can do about it?
Well, we say that we need to have more support of both the people who are being abused and more education to those who often abuse without even realizing that it's abuse. So CARP has been very much a part of the World Elder Abuse Day for many years now and trying to get the word out like you are today.
Hmm. You know, the RCMP, and they're talking about the signs that someone may be subjected to abuse or neglect. And I mean, we could go through that list, but I'm just wondering what you do, Bill, through CARP to help people recognize or at least maybe empower people to say something.
Yeah, first of all, we did a survey of our members right across the country last year, and although the official figures is 1 in 6 seniors are subject to abuse, we actually found that 1 in 5 of the people that, in terms of our estimates, so it is, it's very high, and people, it's not just physical abuse, it includes mental abuse, and it also includes financial abuse, and all of those need stronger regulation and law support so they can't happen. You know, one of the things, for instance, and this is just part of it, but the privacy legislation has created a problem in that banks and others, when their employees are suspicious that maybe some senior is being abused financially by somebody taking advantage of access to their account or their credit cards, they're often feeling that they can't do any kind of reporting because of privacy laws. Mm. We've got to make those more clear, more stronger, and we also have to make sure that the authorities prosecute elder abuse as strongly as they do other kinds of abuse. You know, a person can rob a bank and be put away for 6 to 10 years. They can rob a senior and get a rap on the knuckles and told not to do it again.
You know, I'd reached out to someone else with ACE, and that is a group here, Advocates for the Care of the Elderly, and,
yes.
and the suggestion that, you know, they're worried that maybe some of the work that was gained, some of the legwork is kind of falling by the wayside, that perhaps this was something that was important to government and agency, and now a little less so. You get that sense?
And that's true. You know, a few years ago, Nova Scotia is one of the only provinces that actually has a formal senior abuse referral line, a single number that you can call that's handled by the Department of Seniors, so you can report suspected abuse. And it's almost as if when our government took the step ahead of all others to create that, they decided that was enough and they would go on to think about other things. So we would agree with the ACE people that abuse, it seems so commonplace now. We're almost getting used to reading in the paper everything from very older adults being forced to be separated in their older years, as just happened last week, and certainly that's a form of abuse, to the more basic kind of abuses in long-term care facilities. And I think in some ways we're thinking of these things as normal now, and somehow we have to denormalize them.
Agreed completely. We've got Bill Van Gorder here. He's on the National Board of Directors for CARP. I still struggle with what to call that, Bill.
Well, Canadian Association of Rejuvenated Persons.
That'll work perfectly. PharmaCare, big announcement yesterday. What does CARP, is there a response from CARP?
Well, I hate to be commenting this after your expert that you just had on, but I think he pointed out it's a hugely complicated issue, and they're not saying that they're even recommending this all be in place for another 8 or 9 years. That's two governments away, at least federally. There's some tremendous steps that have to be taken in terms of getting all the provinces on board. We are just hoping very strongly and frankly that this isn't just pre-election hype and good hope, and that something really is going to come of it. There's everything that committee has recommended. Almost all of it is worthwhile. But boy, they've bitten off an awful lot, and it will be so easy for both provincial and federal governments to say it's too expensive, it's too complicated. The one thing they have spent money on is trying to pull together all the national organizations and departments that are involved in pharmaceuticals, so that they can speak with one voice on a national level, and then to give them another $15 million to spend on doing that. That's great for the bureaucrats working in that area. It still doesn't put drugs into the hands of the people who can't afford them. So we like what they're saying should happen. We're very concerned that it's going to be so long to make it happen, and nothing really there to talk about solving all those very complicated issues that your former speaker talked about. So we can't say we don't like it, but we're really going to want to hold all the government's feet to the fire on this one, because there's a long way to go.
The Canadian Association of Rejuvenated People. Bill Van Gorder, thank you for doing this.
You're so welcome. Thanks for jumping.
Have a great weekend. Bill.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bill Van Gorder with CARP on the line, talking a bit about, well, two things. Tomorrow being acknowledging World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. If a Crown prosecutor can say they're recommending jail time for a Halifax police officer who broke the nose of a homeless guy who was kneeled in front of him, who was intoxicated, I think we can do a better job of making people perhaps more aware of what the consequences, and then maybe even follow up and convict a few people who are guilty of abusing elders. I think that sounds like don't carry water in a paper bag, and that sounds like don't drink water out of a paper bag box juice water box thing. Matt Spurway. We'll find out more about Rosanna Cleveland when we get back after this break. And they stay there. 114-110. The score last night. Was it that close, Matt Brand? Was it really that close?
Yeah.
I understood 100% when you were saying with the panel conversation yesterday on the Rick Howe Show that you would absolutely want to see a Game 7. But aren't you glad they don't have to?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would have been nice to win at home, and you know, it would be nice for the drama, but
beating them,
I just want to get, it's just nice to have it.
Beating them in their own arena or in their own stadium, as you know, it was the last game in that facility.
Yeah.
See, I'm not a total idiot. I do pay a little bit of attention
to all the
everything
weird
else
stuff surrounding
all
the
of
game.
The stuff around it. Absolutely. So what's this about, a charge? Raptors president being investigated?
Yeah, I didn't know that until Sky mentioned it to me this
morning.
Yeah,
I'm just watching it here. Sheriff's Office not ruling out a charge after, was it Masai?
Yeah, Masai Ujiri.
Was reportedly struck an officer?
I guess he didn't have his credentials, and he was trying to get onto the court.
Oh.
And then I guess there was like
a scuffle
sort of
ensued?
Scuffle of some sort.
It ensued. You need to use the word ensued.
A scuffle ensued. Sorry, I got to use the
proper vernacular.
Termage. It's a word now.
Okay. And the parade, they just showed the route, and I think it is the same route that they always wanted to take the Stanley Cup down if they ever win again in Tirana.
Well, we'll see if it will work out for them if it ever happens.
We're going to be on the air Monday while that's taking place. You're pulling two shifts, so you're going to be on all day.
Double duty.
As all of the producers next week. And I'd asked so you want me to, what, go live with a Toronto parade? I didn't tell you the answer I got.
Oh.
I said, you know what, did you want us to do this? He said, it depends. If there's a million people in viewing parties everywhere, maybe he wants us to go wall to wall.
We'll see.
Well, I hope not, because I got guests booked. Oh, well, we could all just sit here and listen to the radio together.
Each other.
Sure.
Have a bevy.
A little bit of a sip. Mm-hmm. And Matt Spurway, are you tired? Did you stay up late? Did you watch the game? Are you cheering for the Raptors?
Hey, Sheldon, how you doing?
I'm okay. Yeah,
I supported the Raptors with my family in a couple of ways. One, we watched Jurassic Park on Netflix over the weekend.
Nice.
And we were cheering the Raptors on there. And I did what I did to maintain their winning streak by going to bed before the game started. And I did that extra well last night.
Nice.
So I feel like I own a little bit of the victory, too.
Congratulations, Toronto Raptors. And on behalf of the team, thank you, Matt Spurway, for your assistance.
It's my pleasure. No, it's a pretty awesome thing, eh?
Oh, it is huge. And you know what? Yeah. I'm not a sport fan. But I can absolutely appreciate the gravity of what just happened last night.
Agreed.
This is a pretty strong story, and I know we spoke with you about Rosanna Cleveland a few months ago. In fact, a rather devastating and rare spinal stroke that afflicted her back in September 2018. How's Rosanna now? How's she doing?
Well, she's home. And that's a huge step in the journey that she's been on since September when she suffered the stroke. So many of your listeners will know Rosanna's name. Rosanna Cleveland is a phenomenal person, mother, volunteer, and she's a leader of a group called the Take Action Society, a group out of North Dartmouth that serves the youth in the community with just an incredible array of experiences and programming, all for free. She's done so much for that community and for the youth in that community and the volunteers in many other capacities. So just a force. And then last September, like we said, she started to not feel well, went to the hospital. You know, they didn't recognize it right away. It's so rare. They sent her home. She was back the next morning feeling worse, I believe it was. And they realized what had happened is she was suffering a stroke in between her shoulder blades, like in her spine, which is so rare. I think they toured every doctor within 50 miles through her room just so they could see for themselves what it looks like. Mm. So it paralyzed her essentially from the neck down.
Wow.
She was told she would never walk again. And she spent almost 8 months at the rehab clinic over in Halifax with the wonderful staff there. And we got her home a couple of weeks ago. She's walking under her own power. She has a cane. And she's still got a lot of rehabilitation in front of her, but her recovery to date has been remarkable. And yet, if you knew Rosanna, you might not be surprised, because she is one stubborn, tough person. And she has a lot more work to do ahead of her, a lot more engagement with the community. She wasn't going to be held down. So So she's back at home. She's still recuperating. And so for the last couple of months, we've been raising the money that's going to be needed to help her be home successfully. So that includes a complete bathroom renovation with the walk-in tub and the other different fixtures. It includes a very expensive hospital-type bed and the mattresses that runs well over $6,000 for that piece of equipment, and a number of other expenses that go along with the situation she's found herself in. So we started a GoFundMe page a couple of months ago, and over $8,500 has been donated by more than 100 people in the community. They started something called Take Them a Meal. It's a website that coordinates people's ability to donate meals to her family and to her household while she was gone, and that's continuing. Folks have just found so many different ways to give, and so tonight is kind of the culmination. We've had the GoFundMe page. A lot of youth in the community have done bottle drives and movie nights and door-to-door fundraising. We'll be celebrating and thanking them tonight. A couple of big organizations have made big donations. The Progress Club of Halifax has committed $1,000 to the cause. We're very grateful for that. The Kinsmen have come through with a $5,000 donation, which just still blows me away. And tonight we hope to raise even more by this event that you're so graciously allowing me to promote on your show.
He's one of the organizers of said event. It's Roseanne and Cleveland Welcome Home Party and Fundraiser. Tell me the when. Tell me the where.
Yes. So it is tonight, 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. It's at the Dartmouth Zatzman Sportsplex in the Big Nantucket Room there. And we're having a welcome home party. Roseanne will be there for everyone to see her again and to welcome her back. We've got a huge silent auction with an incredible array of things to bid on. We're going to have a few bigger ticket items, a live auction. We're going to have a 50-50 draw, and it's going to be a lot of fun and hopefully raise a bunch of money. So 7 o'clock tonight at the Sportsplex. And if you are looking for, well, if you're going out to eat anywhere this summer, you should come by and pick up some gift cards. We have gift cards from Boston Pizza, Cheese Curds, Five Fishermen, King of Donair, McKelvey's, Moxie's, Old Triangle, and on and on. There's a beautiful package from from the Bicycle Thief.
There we go.
The Bicycle Thief donated a $100 gift card plus two bottles of wine, a couple of wine glasses, and some swag as well. So it's a beautiful package from them. And Murphy's, the Cable Wharf, has donated some great experiences. So we have four passes for the cocktail cruise on the tall ship Silva. Mm-hmm. We've got four passes for deep sea fishing. We've got all kinds of great stuff. So we really hope that people will come out, show their support for Roseanne, and buy some great items and raise some money with us.
Do you have a signed copy of The Crow by Amy Spurway?
I can get you one of those anytime, Sheldon. Anytime.
I want to just thank you for what you've been doing. I know you said it takes a village. People really have responded, and obviously there are businesses who see people at their doorstep every day looking for items for donation for causes, maybe not as important, but maybe just as important, maybe not near. We just want to wish her well and you well and invite everybody to come by. Bring your wallets to see and welcome home Roseanne Cleveland tonight.
Thank you so much, Sheldon, and you hit the nail on the head. This much generosity from these many people is really a reflection of Roseanne and her contribution to the community, and in some ways this is just paying her back in a small way for the things she's done. So really appreciate your time. Hope to see everyone tonight at the Sportsplex, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Matt Spurway, go Raptors.
Go Raptors.
All right, take care. Matt Brand, go Raptors doesn't make any sense anymore, does it?
Why not?
I don't know. I'm asking.
It's just a general, there's nothing wrong with what you're saying.
Hi there. Also, how the heck are you? Go Raptors.
And also, I now go by Matt Brand Vliet, so thank you very much.
What?
Matt Brand Vliet.
What's Matt Brand Vliet? What am I missing?
Kind of an offshoot of Fred Van Vliet.
Who's Fred Van Vliet?
Oh, my Lord. Just go to commercial.
Okay. You got the button.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best.
From undrafted rookie to NBA champ, Fred VanVleet's journey has been a long fight. Well, you were wondering who he was before the break.
Wait a second.
No, wait, you were wondering why I didn't know who he was before the break.
It's clear you didn't watch a second of NBA.
I told you I didn't watch a second of it.
I don't mean last night's game.
Of it. Of course. I don't have that channel. Whatever channel it was on.
Go Raps.
Go Raps. Sports goes sports. Fred VanVleet's the same age as my son.
Jeez, that could have been your son out there.
Well, it could have been. I would have known had he been out there, and I would have been watching, because he probably would have got me tickets.
Speaking of sons, Fred had a son during this playoff series. Fred Jr.
Really?
That's adorable.
Ah.
And he played a lot better after he was born. True fact.
Well, see, sometimes being sleep deprived helps make you, it makes you focus. Makes you focus.
Very little evidence of that on this side of the glass.
No, man, this is great.
I'm mostly just looking up songs about being the best. That's what I'm doing back here.
This is fun, though. You know what? We're waiting for our next guest to ring us up. I think I have his number somewhere, but his people put a call into us, an email, actually, to see if we wanted to have him on the show. And I said, sure, absolutely. Let's make it so.
Is that number I'm supposed to call right there?
Well, if you do, that's just going to be the assistant. You can try it. And maybe Katie will be, not Katie Hardtie, but Katie, his assistant, might be able to help us find Brandon.
All right.
Maybe he's recovering from the NBA championship. While Matt is dialing and we're listening to music to celebrate the best, the Toronto Raptors winning the NBA championship, I shared Michael D'Adder's cartoon picture of Uncle Sam leaned up against Stanley Cup and reading a note that says, "Now we have your cup, Canada," kind of like a ransom note. Would you call the NBA championship trophy, though, a cup? I'm not trying to pick on Michael D'Adder, because I love the concept. It's great. And probably would have been more difficult or challenging for him to have addressed it in such a way that it was your championship trophy, I guess. Well, he could have. One of the other things that, and I was telling this to Dan Allstrand earlier today, I do a bit of my own mechanic work and been able to, through the years, help my kids. You might want to turn that down. Their ad's playing. when I saw an ad for a floor jack, like a kind of a mechanic garage style floor jack was on Kijiji, not Kijiji, but the other one, Facebook Marketplace. So I reached out to the person. They said, "Well, no, I'm not actually home until the weekend." I said, "Okay, well, I can stop by on Saturday." And they said, "Great." I said, "What time?" They messaging back and forth. I said, "Well, you could stop by anytime if you like. And if I'm not there, it's leaned up against the wall. Then you can just, there's a jar in the back step. You can put the money in the jar." Isn't that trust? Doesn't that go a long way when you have somebody who says, just leave the money and take the item? Like, that's trusting. And then, of course, what I thought about for a second was, gee, pers, I hope that person who's selling it actually owns it. Be awful to show up and take something and send money for it, and turned out they didn't even have the rights to sell it.
What'd you do?
Oh, it's this Saturday, so I don't know yet.
Oh, I see. I missed.
Well, Dan Allstrand said, "Yeah, you could put money in, then just put less in," and said, "We haggled too."
Nice.
No, I don't think I could do that though. Kind of takes that part of the equation out. That's the joy of buy and sell of used items.
A little sneaky on Dan's part.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, a little bit of respect for him. Just
the give and take. And I usually start all those negotiations by saying, you want to get as much as possible. I want to pay as little as possible. Where are we going to meet? That's how I do it. So when we have a meeting, a standing committee on public accounts, and the opposition puts out a news release that Liberals and the NDP failed to make doctor recruitment a priority. We did speak with MLA Tim Hallman. He was putting forward the idea that they talk about doctor recruitment at this week's public accounts committee meeting. And, saying that the others involved didn't want to, had no interest in this. Welcome back to the program. I'm hoping this is Brendan McGuire, MLA for Halifax Atlantic.
It is. Good to talk to you, Sheldon.
Are you tired from the Raptors win?
Sports go sports, buddy.
Yay, man. World champs, or basketball champs of the world.
I watched one game. I shouldn't even say this publicly. I watched one game, and I watched not a second of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So what is it? It's too late for me.
No. You watched exactly 100% more games than I did, so... And I'm talking about it. So
there you go.
No harm, no foul. No harm, no foul.
Okay.
Okay. So, not wanting to make this a priority, Brendan. I don't want to be rude, but I want to be blunt. Yep. Does the Liberal government have a plan for doctor recruitment for healthcare?
So I first of all, I wanted to talk about the comment that was made about it not being a priority, and I will defend both the Liberals and the NDP because I think that it's unequivocally not true. I've been on public accounts now. I'm the longest sitting member on public accounts, so 6 years now. In the past, we were hearing complaints from the opposition that when the Auditor General's reports were coming forward, which they spend taxpayers' dollars and resources on, that these reports were not coming to public accounts in a timely manner. Some of them weren't coming at all, and there was no follow-up. And we even heard from the Auditor General himself, who said, you know, if these reports are being done, and let's be honest, most of these reports are not exactly friendly to government. You know, they're pointing out where there's deficiencies in departments and deficiencies within policy. So what had happened was there was a change made that, okay, when the Auditor General, like everywhere else in Canada, when an Auditor General makes a report, this appears before public accounts, and there's a follow-up. Now, having said that, healthcare takes up 50% of our budget. It is the most important issue, and let's be very clear, it's the most important issue, not just for the current government, but for previous governments. It's also a very, I've sat in the legislature now for 6 years. It's an extremely important issue from the oppositional side. I hear it from the NDP and I hear it from the Conservatives. And so what we said was, okay, we need to make a committee that's specifically for health and make it so that it, like public accounts, can be viewed by the public through TV. So doctor recruitment, for example, is an issue that has been brought up in public accounts before. It has been discussed, and it's also going to appear before the health committee. So to say that it's not a huge issue is simply not true, and that it's not a priority. In matter of fact, when the Conservatives were given topics to bring up in the health committee, they didn't bring up doctor recruitment. I think it was the NDP that actually brought it forward, and we agreed, yes, we need to have this discussion. So to say that it's not a priority is just, it's just not true. So,
well, you know,
I'm defending, and here I am, a Liberal MLA, and I'm also defending the NDP because, you know, they themselves had brought this forward. So
we've got Brendan McGuire here as a member of the Liberal Party. He is the MLA for Halifax Atlantic. Brendan, I don't know how you're going to answer this, but are you told not to say crisis? Are you being told by the party not to call this a healthcare crisis?
No, absolutely not. These are just words. Like, what we need is action, and what we need is continued action. And I will say this, that the premier, myself, anyone you have a discussion with will tell you that the number one issue facing Nova Scotians is healthcare. I mean, it's as plain as day. And the last budget that we just passed was a healthcare budget. It was, you know, more money for doctor recruitment. It was more money for nurse practitioners. You know, when I first started, I had a conversation with the Dalhousie School of Nursing to talk to them about the role of nurse practitioners, for example. And at the time, there were 30 nurse practitioners practicing in all of Nova Scotia. The 5 or 6 years since, there's over 300. So, you know, there's money for, there was money in this budget for wait times. There's money for new equipment. There's money for new facilities. So to say that, you know, it isn't a priority or that we don't identify this as an issue is simply untrue. I think all parties, all citizens in Nova Scotia, whether you have a positive or not so good experience within the healthcare system. I mean, I have people approach me that have not had the best experience in the healthcare system that obviously want change. But I also have people who approach me who have great experiences in the healthcare system that say, like, yeah, you know, we need more. So we all know. Let's be honest here. Everybody knows that there are issues in the healthcare system. We're making progress. Is it something that happens overnight? No. You know, there's now more doctors practicing in Nova Scotia than ever before. There is, I just saw a statistic that said since May 1st, 86,000 Nova Scotians have found family care, which is the fourth best in Canada. I mean, and you have to look at it like we're a small province. You know, we're competing internationally for doctors. So there's an issue there. But you know, the last budget was reflective of the concerns of the people of this province, which is we need to invest heavily in healthcare.
Brendan McGuire, we don't have any more time. I'm going to have to get you back. We're going to talk more about healthcare.
I know
it's not as simple, you know, it's not a simple problem to fix, and I want to know more about what government's plan is, and whether it's you or the premier or the health minister, we'd more than welcome that conversation. Thank you. And
I appreciate it. If I could say one last thing before I go,
yep.
My son Oliver, it turns 6 tomorrow. Happy birthday, Oliver. Time flies.
That's 6 years old. Mine's 25, Brendan. Mine's 25.
I don't want to hear that.
Mine's the same age as Fred Van Vliet.
So you had him when you were 10, right?
Exactly. Enjoy the rest of today.
You too. Take care, buddy. Bye.
He is the MLA for Halifax Atlantic, Brendan McGuire. No, I was 25 when I had him. Well, 24. We'll be back after the break. News is next, and then Walk with Refugees for Stronger Canada. We'll tell you what that's about after this.